Blog Talk Radio.
Tornado.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, we are live here. This is Ramble Rails with Bergeron.
Yo, Tornado, talk to me, Cal.
We're coming at you with another fine show. Fine show tonight. We have the best of both worlds here. It's actually going to be more like the Fight News Unlimited contact sports show. Towards the end of the broadcast, we have an expert that's going to talk about head injuries in general in sports. We're going to try to corner him a little bit into the boxing and MMA and wrestling areas of discussion on that front. But
can we add football into that too?
Oh yeah, of course. We're definitely going to have some football.
What about synchronized swimming and water polo?
I don't think there's a lot of head injuries in those sports.
There very well could be. They just don't get reported.
Water polo from getting drowned, but I don't know if that's considered a traditional head injury. But anyway, John M. Phillips is a world-class attorney who's going to be joining us to talk about head injuries, and he's actually connected with the NFL Players Association, so able to shed some light on that subject. And, you know, we have plenty to talk about in that regard because we had a kid that died at a church event that they reported on a couple weeks ago. His family just recently filed a lawsuit. So our guest is going to probably talk a little bit about that one and some other cases. That I know he mentioned one. There was one mentioned in the PR that we got for this interview, so we'll have to talk to him about that. He's also a Florida attorney, so you know what that means. You get to delve into the whole saga of the boxer behind bars down there right now.
Tim Anderson, absolutely.
Right.
You know, that's a very passionate topic of mine, and I'll be more than happy to delve into that topic.
Cool. Yeah, I just saw that he was from Jacksonville, Florida, before I got on the show, and that's the first thing I thought of, you know, because now we're both familiar with that story a little bit, so we'll bring that up. Try not to take up the whole show on it, even though we could. But we also have John Alessio, who is just one of those incredible legends of the mixed martial arts world. Has won 8 out of his last 9 fights. He's been in the WEC, the UFC, fought a real who's who of main guys from the get-go, really. One of his earliest opponents was Pat Miletich, who, oddly enough, shares something in common with my family, because his wife's maiden name is Bergeron, or so I'm told. Fourth loss of his career was against Pat Miletich back in 2000, a long time ago. So he started in 98, and he has compiled a record of, get this, 32 wins, 14 losses. I think he's fought at multiple different weights, but tonight we're going to be catching him right before the weigh-in. And he said he might be a little grumpy because he has to cut to 155.
I was either stuffing myself trying to put weight on when my tummy was hurting, or normally I'd be like, you'd be interviewing me from the sauna.
I was pretty good with weight. My lone semester of boxing competitively. But I had to cut weight a few times as a GB wrestler. But, you know, one thing I was thinking about when I set up the interview with our second guest tonight, the lawyer, and the head injury expert there is, you know, it's kind of weird to me. There was just a story out this week that Josh Koscheck went out and said that wrestling is like 10 times harder than MMA. And it kind of made me think in relation to tonight's guest and the whole subject, you know, my worst injury in any combat sport, so to speak, was in a wrestling match when I got kneed in the face and my bottom rack of teeth went right through my bottom lip. And if I ever shaved my goatee, you'd be able to see it. But never had a cut whatsoever in boxing, ever. And, you know, obviously you have the headgear in college, but I just thought that was kind of funny. Think, looking back, that was my worst thing, was wrestling. But it can happen anywhere.
A lot of times people ask me, and of course I'll, you know, discuss this with our guests when we get them on in about an hour. You know, people ask me things about injuries in boxing and, you know, amateur boxing versus pro boxing. And a lot of times the people always say to me, well, you can't get, or it's harder to get a concussion in amateur boxing because of the headgear. And that is not necessarily true. You get concussions from your brain hitting on the inside of your skull. So any time you get, and headgears don't prevent you from getting knocked out. The biggest asset to a headgear is the protection of your face. You can get a broken nose with a headgear on, absolutely, I would know that. But with the cheek protectors, you know, it does offer some protection to your nose. And with the part that goes on your forehead, that the biggest protection of that is it protects your eyebrows, which, if you've seen a lot of boxing, is the most susceptible area to cuts. Now, you figure, a guy like me, I've had 30-some fights and sparred hundreds, if not thousands, of rounds, and I never had a cut over my eyes. I am a very soft-skinned person. I have kind of like that Marciano-type skin where it would, you know, if caught correctly, the eyebrows would bust open. In fact, I was about 15 years old. We were having a pool party one time, and I was trying to surfboard on a boogie board, and I fell off, and it came up and hit me in the face and split me right open, 10 stitches right there. So you figure, if I've been involved in boxing for that many years, had a lot of fights, never had a cut over the eyebrows, that is a testament to the headgear, you know, more than anything. But you figure also with the headgear, you figure even if they weigh 6 ounces or 8 ounces and your head gets snapped back, that is another 8 ounces of weight that is getting snapped back with your neck, and that's causing your brain to, you know, I guess twist around on the inside of your skull. So headgears do not prevent concussions. They do not prevent you from being knocked out. I remember we had a kid on, came on the team my junior year. He was adopted, and his parents were so overly protective of him that it actually used to piss everybody else off. And being the fact that I was a club officer for the Rock Haven Boxing Club, and I was, you know, one of the team, like, quote-unquote co-captains, when we had our, you know, family day, you know, they had me open up the boxing room and show it around to some of the perspective, you know, from the parents and all that. This kid's adoptive mother literally grilled me for a half an hour about the safety of our headgears. And he had, I guess, like an ear infection when he was younger. She looked at every headgear we had about the ears. And, I mean, and that's why the kid, and the kid was older than me. You figure if I was 20, he might have been about 22. And, I'm sitting there, I'm like, lady, you gotta let this kid grow up a little bit. And what pissed me off was he had an exhibition,
And you kind of got slapped around a little bit, you know. You got slapped around, hey, but you know what? We all win some, we all lose some. And the kiddie fight was pretty good. So then a couple weeks later, we're all having like our first or second bouts of the season. And I just had a bad fight that night. You know, fought a kid, I ended up fighting him like three times. I had a bad fight that night. You know, it wasn't one of my better ones. It was close. I hurt my hand in the third round. I ended up fighting the third round one-handed. Lost a close decision. I did not get a medal. This kid, who all he had to do was step on the scale at 112 pounds and there was nobody in his weight class, got a medal for a walkover. So now he's walking around showing his medal off to people. And he's like, I see you didn't get a medal tonight. Look at my medal. I said, yeah. At least I got in the ring and fought. You know, you got a medal because you weigh 112 pounds. I know guys that, you know, were the nationals every year because they were in the lower weight classes. I knew one guy in 4 years never once fought in the regionals. That would kind of piss you off a little bit when, like, you know, when you're fighting in a stacked weight class and you're going to fight Friday and Saturday night, and you get other guys just walking straight to nationals. My freshman year, there were two kids from Westfield up in Massachusetts. One was 112 pounds, one was 119 pounds. They both fought a guy from Lock Haven that year who was about 119 to 125. He knocked them both out. That was their only bout going into the regionals. Both had a loss on their record. They go to regionals. There's nobody else in the weight class. So one steps on the scale at 112, you're going to nationals, you're an All-American. At 0-1, you're going to nationals. At 119, you're 0-1. You're an All-American now. I'm like, you got to be shitting me. They both get the nationals in a weight class with only three guys in it. Both of them get the buys. So now they're going for the national title. Both of them at 0-1, and both of them got knocked out in like the first or second round. So you look at these two guys that their whole career record was 0-2, and they were a national finalist, a silver medalist in the nationals.
Yeah, fat guys didn't get that luxury.
Yeah, exactly. You know, for you and I, Rich, you know, going back to 1998, if, you know, for one of us to win, we would have had to fight three times and win three times against good competition.
Yeah.
You know, I knew other guys that just, hey, I'm 112 pounds, I'm stepping right into the national finals. I'm one guy I know. He was a friend of mine. He was champ that year at 112 pounds. And he basically, all he did was make weight and fight one fight.
Yeah.
One fight.
There were no easy fights that year, you know, in regular competition or the nationals. And I don't know, I guess the only luck of the draw is that same old story I like to repeat every now and then, but not too often. But the kid who had his feet born on the wrong side to get to Michael Jordan. And I kind of had to chuckle today when I read a little headline that said John Jones, the light heavyweight MMA guy that's champion in the UFC there, is the Michael Jordan of MMA, the headline
says.
So I wondered if they were talking about my Michael Jordan. Or the other. But
I have a feeling not. It was funny. I was actually talking about him today with a colleague of mine was clocking out for the day, and he was saying something to me. He goes, "Yeah, Tony, I'm mad at you. If you weren't such a boxer, you just and would kick my ass. I'd tell you off." And he's a good friend of mine anyway, so he and I always bust each other's tongue. And I said one of our other colleagues was joking out because he got some of my fights on YouTube, and he's like, man, he goes, I always see you as just being a laid-back, jovial guy. We always laugh, we always talk, we joke around. He goes, but then I watch these videos. He's like, you're a legitimate badass. I wouldn't want to mess around with you, dude. He's like, I would never think that to see you because you're just such a joking around guy. I'm like, yeah, I can be a little rough, and you know, we laughed around about it. So I told this other guy, I was like, yeah, man, you got to see some of my fights on YouTube.
oh my God, how do I find them? I said, well, you can find them one of two ways. Either go to YouTube and the user is Tornado TP, or type in Michael Jordan Boxing. It's Michael Jordan Boxing, and then I told him the whole story about this guy who was named Mike Jordan, but we looked at him and we're like, oh, we're announcing him as Michael. He has no choice.
Funny coincidence. Anyway, we got to hook up with John Alessia right now. We promised to get a hold of him at 8:15 Eastern. It's right about that time. And he's getting ready to weigh in, so I'm sure he wants to cruise right through this interview. And hopefully we get him at a good time. But no matter how much time we get with this guy, it's a great opportunity to talk about really the history of the sport, dating back when we were fighting for a title in college. 1998, this guy started his first fight. So, you know, he can give us that story of how, while we were thinking about boxing, he was getting into professional MMA. And we were still trying to get our college degree.
Hello.
Speaking of John.
Yes, sir.
How's it going? This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
How you doing?
Great. We're live here, and we're on the line with our boxing guru, Tony Pinnacal, both the Tornado and the Boxing Rain Man. So if you have any boxing stories that you want to talk about, he's the guy.
None that could probably compare to theirs.
Well, we were just actually talking about back in 1998 when you first started mixed martial arts, at least according to Sure Dog anyway, is when you first...
Yep. Yeah, that was my first pro fight.
That was my only semester in college boxing, and Tony was actually in my weight class. That's how we ended up meeting and co-host on the show, so kind of a coincidence that you started your pro career when we were... getting on in our amateur college career boxing.
Nice, nice. You're in college, so you're probably close to my age. I was only 18 for my first pro fight.
Oh, wow, yeah. I had the luxury of turning 21 my senior year in college.
Nice.
So, I was in my junior year when I boxed down at the Virginia Military Institute for a semester. I had the coach.
Right on.
School I graduated from was Norwich, Vermont. But anyway,
I didn't graduate no college. I go to the school for hard knocks. Hard school.
That's all right. You know, some of the most famous and well-known people throughout history never went to high school. So.
True.
Well, I was saying, you know, I've said this in the past.
Yeah.
I got a college education, a degree. But mostly what I've learned was I learned in a tough South Philly gym, because that's where I really grew up, you know, from being 18 to about 23, 24. You know, I mean, you can go to college and it's a very, I mean, as I felt, a sheltered life up there. But going down, training with the real tough guys, that's what you taught you really had to, you know, to use a lack of a better term, be a man.
Now, John, tell us a little bit about what it was like to be involved in this sport in those really pioneering days, those 90s there.
So, repeat the question one more time. I'm sorry. It's just kind of loud here. I'm at the weigh-ins and stuff.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like to be involved back in 98 in those days when the sport was still growing?
It was a dark age back then for the sport. It was basically, you know, it was illegal everywhere, only on Indian reservations and things like that. So, you know, the fights were hard to come by, and there really was no weight classes or time limits or doctor's checks and things like that. So... But, you know, I knew inside I wanted to be a fighter, none of that mattered to me, you know, like where I fought, and stuff like that. I just wanted to fight. Definitely a different time now. I've seen the sport go from, you know, like I just talked about, to a commission and rules and regulations and a complete legit sport. So it's nice to see the sport have grown so much, and it's even better to still be in the game and relevant in the game at this time. But the thing is, I started at a real young age, you know, and I'm only 32 years old now and coming into my prime while the sport's blowing up. So I feel like everything is perfect, you know. But, yeah, it's nice to see the sport finally get the recognition that I always believed it deserved.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. You fought three fights in your first couple of years on this, or three times on the same night, twice on the same night.
Yeah.
What was that like back in those days to be one of those guys who had to fight twice in the same night?
Yeah, I thought it was awesome, man. I'm a fan of tournaments, and you never see them happen like that anymore. You see them now just happen over a period of time, but if they brought an old-school Valet Tudo tournament back, you know, you could sign me up.
Yeah, I used to say that would be one of those big gimmick ideas that, you know, if they could get away with it, I wish they would do.
Yeah, I think they could do four-man tournaments, you know, fighting two and twice in one night. They should do that again.
Yeah,
but anything more than twice in a night.
For one fight, right? Sometimes.
Yeah. But what's funny is if you get your first fight over quickly, you're pumped up and you want to go again anyways.
Right, yeah.
That's true. Yeah, so I was always fortunate to get my first fight over as fast, and I was always ready to go for round two, you know?
Lately, you've been doing pretty good. 8 of 9, you've won your last 9 fights. You won 8 of them, so you're obviously doing pretty good. Fighting for a lot of different circuits. What's that been like? You know, going all over the place to fight. Now with Superior Case Combat, this is your second try with them, right?
Yes, sir. Second show for them, and they treat me great, man. It's an honor to fight for them, of course. I live in Las Vegas, so to fight right here in my backyard now is even better, you know, friends and family, and I don't have to travel or deal with any of that kind of thing. So it's awesome. And, you know, of course, Vegas is the biggest fight city in the world, and so we got the best fans, and people come here all the time to support these shows, so it's just a great atmosphere.
Well, not to mention, you know, you really have an opportunity where you have to stay indoors to train. You know, it's like beautiful weather out here. I'm actually out here myself, and I can't get over being from New England, the constant nice temperatures, you know.
Yeah, it's good. And I came from Vancouver, Canada, where we get a lot of rain, and it's really wet and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, the only one thing I don't like about it is it's just so blah. I miss my green trees, you know. It's just a little too much dirt.
That is kind of
cool. Well, Rich, I'll tell you something, man. You're going to be happy you're not in New England right now. I heard like 60-some% of the state of Connecticut's out of power. I don't know what the hell happened. What's going on in Massachusetts or any place further, but the East Coast ain't too fun right now.
Yeah. I'm about to go back there late November, so I don't have to deal with that then, but so much for global warming. I think it's global cooling.
Yeah, exactly.
What's going on?
Yeah. It depends on where you're at, right?
Yeah. Now, John, who would you say was the toughest fight you've ever had?
Toughest fight was, I would have to say, with Thiago Alves. It went 3 rounds, split decision. And boy, that boy kicked the shit out of my leg, man. I tell you what, I was in a wheelchair today. My leg was so swollen. But not once in the fight did I let on or let anybody believe that I was hurt. You know, I just kept going all the way to the end and, you know, fought it out with him. And, you know, I came up short. But all in all, that was probably my toughest fight.
And how about your best moment in the sport so far?
Best moment? Man, every time I win, it's the best moment at that time. you know, anytime I win a title, I've got 4 titles in my career, Tachi Palace, 2 King of the Cage titles, 2KO titles. So And every time you get a chance to put a belt around your waist, that's always a pretty good moment, satisfying, you know. You really feel like you, you know, accomplished a little something extra other than just, you know, beating somebody down. You came out with, you know, a little piece of gold and hardware, so that's always good. But, I mean, you know, I just feel really lucky and blessed every opportunity I get to fight, and I just feel like I live a great life, so every moment in my life is nice.
And, you know, obviously you had some experience in the WEC and the UFC, but you've also racked up the kind of record that shows there is life outside the UFC and you can be successful. So what's that been like, you know, trying to find a home with all these different leagues? And has the pay been pretty comparable? Have you been able to, you know, stay above water all these years despite the number one organization?
Yeah, you know, I'd be pretty good. You know, I've got the cool part about it is I've got to travel the world, you know, and see a little bit of everything. And the one good part about fighting for these other shows is, you know, with me having a pretty good name in the sport, you know, I'm either co-main event or main event of a lot of these events. So, you know, a lot of the spotlight gets shined on me, whereas if I was in the UFC, I could be stuck on an undercard and not even get shown or not much talked about my fight, you know. So that's the one thing about it that's nice. And yeah, don't get me wrong, I want to be on the big stage. I want to be in the UFC, and my time will come again when my phone rings from Joe Silva. But, you know, until
another year, it might be, you know, you might be saying, I want to fight for Bellator the way they just got bought out by Viacom.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've had a Bellator contract in last year and or maybe it was earlier this year, and turned it down just because there's just a lot of it's a complicated contract, really. And at the time, I was still in the 170-pound weight class, and just the way it worked out just didn't seem like it was a smart thing for me to do at the time, since like I said, I'm making pretty good money fighting these other shows, and I got complete control of what I do when I go fight to fight with these smaller organizations. Where if I fight for Bellator, they tell me what to do, you know. But now that I'm at 55, Bellator, you know, my mind is a little more open to that with some really good fights in there for me, like Eddie Alvarez and some other guys.
Yeah, I just saw in the news today that their CEO for Viacom had the largest pay raise, like, out of anybody in the United States this year. Like $50 billion more than he made last year. So
that'd be nice to be him.
Money to throw around.
Yeah. I think I got into the wrong business then.
I don't know. But I can't get over, you know, how much the UFC seems to get all the credit, but you know, a lot of these other organizations, they kind of thrive, it seems, on the ability to tell a guy, you know, you can fight anywhere else, you know. If you want to come back to us, you know, we'll try to treat you well. You know, it kind of keeps the other big guys on their toes. Good to hear that, you know, as long as you get a name and you work hard, then you can succeed without them.
And no, I mean, when you're at the UFC too, you know, like you have one bad performance or you lose, you know, they can just catch you on the spot. You know what I mean? There's not very much forgiveness or like second chances. I mean, unless they love you and you've got like a couple fights of the night, that's the only way they really keep you around if you lose, you know. But yeah, I mean, job security is another thing at the UFC that's always scary.
Yeah, especially considering, you know, sometimes they keep a guy around who's lost four in a row, and then they'll just randomly throw somebody off one bad showing. It kind of ramped down a little bit, but still bad in that area. One thing I laugh about, you know, is how as soon as this Bellator deal was made, you know, there was all these comments about buying Strikeforce made the UFC a monopoly. And then Dana White was everywhere saying, oh, Bellator has billions behind them because Viacom stepped in, so there's no monopoly in the UFC. To me, that's like saying, all right, we have to go into the future in this time machine to change the past.
Right.
It doesn't work that way, but, you know. One of the
no, it doesn't.
I ever never heard in an interview with a guy that was in the UFC. I never remember who he was. He said, it's kind of funny when Dana White is the most recognizable figure.
In the sport?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a promoter. It's not even a fighter that's the most recognizable person. he does deserve a lot of credit. He did blow this sport up, you know, and I am grateful for how he, you know, without him doing what he did at the UFC, these other little shows wouldn't be able to survive, you know what I mean, and build, because they've created such a good fan base in general and kept the sport alive. So, you know, he deserves credit there, of course, but I do believe that there should never be a monopoly in the sport.
Well, the difference between, you know, just a label monopoly and practices that, you know, are monopolistic. And it's like, you know, fighting is one of those sports, whether it's boxing, judo, you know, any combat sport. It's one of those sports where, you know, the guys that participate are often stereotyped as being dumb or, you know, easy to take advantage of. And, you know, it's like the history of boxing. You look back at all these seedy promoters who were able to take advantage of fighters and steal half their paychecks over the years. And then you got a new sport like MMA comes along. And, you know, the way it's grown and the way it's designed, like one of those sports where you wish there were bigger shooters. A lot of these situations that developed. Sounds like you got the right idea, being able to be so independent and, you know, choosing your own fate.
Yeah, it's nice and stuff, but, you know, I do want to compete for the UFC. You know, I do want to be on that stage and, you know, really, that's the only real way that you get into the top 10 and really prove that you're the best in the world is if you fight for them, you know. So that's definitely where I want to be, but, you know, until I get that phone call, I'm going to enjoy my freedom and bounce around and fight for the promoters that treat me good and things like that.
Yeah, that's the one thing, too, that always impresses me about MMA. It seems like no matter what fighter you talk to, it's always about the challenge more than the money. You know, and these guys will tell you time and time again, you know, I want to be the best in the world. You know, it doesn't matter if I'm getting paid less than the guy I'm fighting or whatever. As long as I'm fighting with the best of the best and on the grand stage, that's all I care about. And I don't think there's any other sport in the world where, you know, the participants are that dedicated. You know, the money is...
Yeah, well, you know, like fighters are, we're competitive, you know, like if we weren't this competitive and wanted to be the best, then I think we have half-assed fights and people giving up all the time in the middle of fights and like, oh, I'm tired, I've had enough, you know, but it's that desire, you know, there's more desire to be the best in fighting than I think there is in any sport really because of, I guess, what you put on the line, you know, you're really putting your life, so to speak, on the line. I mean, football, you're tackling the guy as hard as you can. Basketball, you're trying to be faster than the guy and put the ball in the hoop. And baseball, you're trying to, you know, something different. Fighting, you try to put another man down and show him that I hit harder than you, I'm faster than you, I'm better than you, I'm tougher than you. And it's the only real sport where you put everything, your pride, your body, your soul, everything on the line.
Tell us a little bit about your fight that's tomorrow night, right?
Tomorrow night.
Superior Cage Combat in general. Tell us a little bit about both of those.
Yeah, I got, go ahead, sorry.
Just whatever you know about your opponent, and tell us a little bit about the league now that you're...
Yeah, I got a good opponent in Luis Firmino. He's got a lot of tough guys. He's, you know, had some big fights and pride and things like that. And he's a great opponent. And I'm excited to fight a guy, you know, like him, especially in my lightweight debut. I wanted to come to 55 and make a statement. I didn't want to come down here to 55, fight some bums and be like, hey, look at me. I want to fight the best and be the best. And goes back to what we were just talking about, really, you know, how we always wanted to be the best. But so I got a great opponent, and I've been so focused for this fight, so determined and dedicated, and I'm so ready. They could put anybody in front of me tomorrow night. It could be Frankie Edgar, GSP. I don't give two shits right now. I'm here to win.
Yeah, that's a good attitude to have going into it. Now, I'm sure Tony must have one question for you.
No, first of all, Rich, I've been involved the whole time. See, that's what happens sometimes. If Rich will get on there, he'll start, you know, hogging up my conversation still. But then, some of the big boxing names on, Rich won't say a word for about 45 minutes at a time. And I was enjoying some of the conversation back and forth, and you know, I enjoy talking to people that have been in the sport for so long and so dedicated. Like 1998, your first pro fight, you're a couple years younger than me, so now I'm like, damn, I really feel old. Well, one thing that Rich and I were talking about probably about a week or so ago. You were talking about the improvements made in mixed martial arts, trying to make it more exciting and more fan friendly. And I remember you saying at the time there was no such thing as weight classes. There wasn't rounds. There wasn't as many of the regulations and things as fighting. And the one two fights that I referenced from back in the 90s, it was probably around the mid to late 90s, I'll give you that 95, 96. They, UFC was just not even UFC.
Sorry, they're announcing something here at the weigh-ins.
The mixed martial arts tournament and the finals came down to Dan Severn and Joyce Gracie. Severn being a big Greco-Roman wrestler, Gracie obviously being Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And basically Gracie fought on the back of the time. There were no rounds. So again, Severn trying to wrestle Gracie on his back playing defense. Then after 15 minutes, then it was starting to get it was starting to get boring because there didn't really a whole lot was going on. And then next thing you know, it was over. And I like the format of rounds. And I'm like I said, I'm a boxing guy. So I'm always used to, a format with rounds because, and one fight, once again, I'll reference was last year with Brock Lesnar. And the guy had him down. The guy was beating him pretty bad in the first round. I apologize for not remembering his name right now.
Shane Carwin.
And it's like, oh, my. Shane Carwin. And I remember, sitting there watching, going, oh, my God, is Lesnar going to survive this last minute and a half? He's getting beaten up pretty good. And the next thing you know, the clock's winding down. Here it comes. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Round's over. Lesnar survives. He stops Carwin in the second round. I like it. It reminds me of a good boxing match. Two guys that fight, fighter A drops fighter B in the opening minute of the round. And it's the ninth round out of a 12-round fight. Fighter B's ahead, and now he's hurt. And it's like, oh, man, if he can be able to survive, he gets up, he's wobbling, and he's doing anything to survive. He's dancing, he's grabbing, he's rope-a-doping, anything. And it's like, not can he just come back? Can he survive? And you're almost like counting down as the round comes out. I love that.
It's like a Pacquiao Marquez 1 and 2.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see what happens in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, I'm excited. I think Pacquiao's going to walk through him this time, though.
You know what? And Rich always likes when I do this. For the big fight, I write a preview prediction, and I analyze everything, style, strengths, weaknesses. And I've been reading a lot on this fight. And I remember earlier in his career, when Pacquiao was more one-handed, he fought Marquez one-handed in two fights, and he fought him on even terms. And Marquez is slowing down just enough where he's easier to get hit now, and Pacquiao's gotten bigger, he's gotten stronger, he's using his other hand. I think Marquez is going to be too brave for his own good.
Yeah. It's going to be good to see. That's what, next weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, next weekend. But, I'm actually, I got to talk to Rich about this one a little bit later. Previous Saturday night, there's a fight on HBO. It's two guys. I think they're a combined, 38-1 with, a combined, 35 knockouts or something. And they're just going to come there and they're just going to, it's just two guys are going to stand there and kick the crap out of each other. And I kind of like that. That was the way I saw it, you know. I wasn't the most stylistic guy. I was what they call a traditional Philadelphian.
There you go. what do you think about that? Sorry about Philadelphia. The last Hopkins fight there.
I didn't see live. I'm glad I didn't. It was funny because I was that night I wasn't feeling well, so I was kind of following it online, and it was funny because one report was saying Dawson was dominating, Hopkins was old, he was looking for a way out. Another report had said Hopkins was baiting him. It was very, the action was very limited. Hopkins was baiting him, and then it happened, and the injury was legit. So you got two respected websites with completely polar opposite opinions.
Right.
I can make an argument either way. I've actually followed Bernard since he got out of prison in the late 80s. And I remember one fight was a title fight, and he was struggling a little bit, and there was a clinch. And he kind of got pushed out of the ring, and he hurt his ankle, and the fight got stopped. And this one they called it a no contest, which the Dawson fight should have been called. So it's like, well, is history repeating itself here? And is this a pattern? The guy's done it before, but he's doing it again. On the other hand, X-rays and MRIs have proved that there was an injury. About 10 years ago,
was it a foul that led to that? It was sort of like referee.
But it was an unintentional foul, so it would have to be a no contest.
I think it should be. They should revert the decision from TKO to no contest for sure.
Absolutely,
it's definitely a cheap way to do TKO.
And just rematch, and fight it out again. But hey, with that being said, I got to start the weigh-ins here. I'm getting looked at funny by the promoter now.
Spot on?
No, I'm on weight, yes, sir.
All right. Well, I'll definitely see you on tomorrow night.
Awesome.
Wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
And, going in and getting ready for this one. I know you'll be all right. I don't think you'll need the luck.
I'm ready, man. I'm ready.
All right. Well, it was awesome. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
Have a good one. All right. That was almost it. TP and RB, 50-50 ratio of time with an MMA guy. That's unheard of. He did well there, Tony.
I know, I'm awesome.
Showed you versatility. Yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, when you look at a guy like that, it makes me wonder, what would it have been like if I was as big a fan of MMA then as I am now. Having both the boxing experience and the wrestling background coming right out of college. If I had been as big a fan of the sport then as I am now,
right,
I would be fighting in MMA, I think. I would be hurt. Because, I still think about it now, and I look at, how much it would take for me to get in a boxing setup at this point to even fight in the amateurs. and it's like, you know, I almost think it would be easier for me to do MMA on the smaller circuit level, you know, just because of the opportunities, the setup. And New England is huge for MMA. It's pretty big for boxing, too, but mainly in the big cities like Boston, Rhode Island, and, you know, the casinos in Connecticut. But MMA is, like, everywhere, you know, as far as opportunities to break right in, you know, whereas in boxing you still kind of have to know somebody to get on a card. And, you know, the amateur fights, unless you do the Golden Gloves, are not easy to get set up with a cold off the bench, you know. So it's kind of interesting when you look back at it and wonder what could have been. But I don't know if I'd be the type of guy that would want to fight twice in the same night, which I would have had to do back then if I got into it. You know, but it's one of those things, you know, it just keeps getting more popular. UFC 138 is coming up this weekend from Birmingham, England. I don't know what the time difference is going to be there, but I think it's obviously going to be on some kind of a delay here in the United States. The main event there is Chris Leben versus Mark Munoz. And speaking of Thiago Alves, who we just heard about from John Alessio, he's going to be on the card fighting Papi Abedi, who I've never heard of. And literally there's like maybe two or three guys who have recognizable names to be on this card. You know, Chris Cope kind of rings a bell. He's fighting Che Mills. Michihiro Omagawa, Japanese guy, fighting Jason Young. Cyril Diabate is on the card, fighting Anthony Parosh. Really, there's not too many other folks that have big names here. It's one of those, like, journeyman cards. But I think the big news is in UFC 136, I mean 137, which just happened last Saturday, and the one coming after 138, which is UFC on Fox 1. And here's the kicker for UFC on Fox 1. I cannot believe they're doing this, but, you know, they're obviously trying to make what they're doing a little bit different. And the report, I just read this today, Velasquez versus Dos Santos, the heavyweight championship fight, will be the only one they show on Fox TV. Can you believe that? There's not going to show any other fight.
So
even if it goes 10 seconds.
Now, do you think that's more for a ploy just to hurt the sales of the Pacquiao-Marquez fight?
No, because that was already discussed, and it's going to be a totally different time situation for them. It's going to be at 9 p.m. Eastern is when the Fox broadcast starts. Now, they're going to be doing a lot of interviews, you know, featurettes about each fighter, of course, a lot of hype. But if you think about it, you know, the fight can only go a maximum 25 minutes with 1 minute between each round.
Right.
So even if they started at 9:30, you're not going to have, you know, a broadcast that goes much past 10. So Manny and Marquez probably won't even be fighting until 11:30.
But look at it like this. For most of your main boxing pay-per-views, and I can't really speak regarding mixed martial arts pay-per-views because I've only ever really watched one or two of them from start to finish. That was going over my one friend's house. But from ordering
from boxing matches,
okay, you know, you can pre-order as early as 30 minutes before the card starts, or 30 minutes after the card starts. And at that 31st minute, I'm pretty sure you can't order that anymore. So say you're sitting there going, okay, I'm gonna, you know, order the Pacquiao-Marquez fight, but then I'm going to watch the whoever the hell fight, Cain Velasquez or whatever.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Well, so, the thing is, the rest of the card is going to be on Facebook and FoxSports.com. And the other aspect of this whole deal is, you know, there really isn't a whole hell of a lot of fans out there who are intent on watching both these fights. You know, it's pretty much these days you're a diehard, pure MMA fan, or you're a pure boxing fan who casually watches MMA, maybe. You know, so, and these guys are heavyweights, you can't forget, so it's probably going to be a quick fight.
Yeah, but I'm just saying about the ordering. Look at it like this. You know, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to, you know, I think the way that they're setting it up is if I am a, I think I'm going to step into Dana White's brain here. Yeah, as much as I hate doing that, that's what I'm going to step into. I'm going to step into his brain because here's...
I'm overwhelming himself with that vast amount of knowledge that he has.
And, yeah. Okay. But here's what I think his game plan is. Okay, I want to hurt the boxing pay-per-view. So I'm going to put my one fight only card, I'm going to put that on at 9 p.m., right at the prime ordering time for Pacquiao Marquez. So... Okay, let's just say it, Rich. And I'm going to use a couple friends of mine, for example. I have a friend of mine, Mike DeLuca, diehard boxing fan, diehard mixed martial arts fan. And he'll watch both. He gets a lot of the pay-per-views. Your hardcore fans like me, yeah, I'm going to be strictly for Pacquiao Marquez. I don't give a shit if there's a UFC fight on Fox or ABC or ESPN or Playboy or whatever. Well, maybe Playboy. You put that fight on at 9 p.m. Now, let's say my friend Mike DeLuca. Let's say he decided to watch the UFC fight at 9 o'clock. And then that fight, with all the hype and all ends, at 9:45 or 10 o'clock, now he can't order the Pacquiao Marquez fight. Even if he wanted to watch it, he'd have to go somewhere else.
Well, I see your point, but I think the people who are really going to want to watch both fights are the ones that are savvy enough on the internet to figure out how to watch the boxing match for free.
Yeah.
Especially since, you know, they're going to be watching the rest of the fights on FoxSports.com or UFC on Facebook. So, I mean, they're already going to be on the computer. Why not? You know, they'll have their computer on, their TV on at the same time on Fox. You know, they can watch the boxing match at the same time they watch the TV if it's next to the computer, you know. But I don't want to encourage pirating. But anyway, you know, the Pacquiao versus Marquez fight, I hope, takes something away from the UFC broadcast because... You know, I think they really need to start paying attention to, number one, the pay scale in boxing, and number two, the fight cards they build around these super fights, you know, because it seems like the UFC, you know, they're suffering from a lot of injuries lately that have killed the main events. You know, they're putting out these payouts where guys get $4,000 or $5,000 for a fight that they train months for, and they might be on suspension 6 months after the fact if they have a bad showing, you know, and then they just go, well, we have medical insurance, you know, like that's an excuse. But these guys are busting their ass to be on these, you know, main event cards because other people get injured or whatever, but, you know, you're seeing even the big stars like George St. Pierre get injured and can't fight in the main event, so. So the UFC has their major medical, sponsored by Aflac, I guess. And they have these guys... you know, like I said, busting their ass to just get paid, you know, and they end up having to rely on their sponsors just to get by. The UFC really isn't taking care of these guys, even though it seems like every time you get one of these guys on the microphone, especially in the last UFC 137, it seemed like everybody was making it a point to thank the Fertittas all of a sudden. And say, these guys are treating us great, especially with all the press the Culinary Union's been getting going after the UFC. And they've even managed to get Perez Hilton on board, the Culinary Union, because they're saying the UFC is the anti-gang. So that's their latest thing. And they're getting so much press that the UFC owners there, the Fertittas, they're running all kinds of commercials on their station casinos out here and in the Vegas network. Like, they're the best thing since sliced bread. Now they got their fighters coming up to the mic all saying they're the best thing on earth. You know, they treat them excellent. But, you know, show me the money. That's what I say. Show me the money. I wish I had that clip from the movie. But I think even a guy like John Alessio that we just said, oh, he's really lucky. You know, so I love having that opportunity to go back to a night like that where you have UFC 1 on Fox, you have Marquez versus Mayweather on pay-per-view, and, you know, the UFC is supposed to be the biggest, best league in MMA, but they're paying their fighters a fraction of what those fighters in the boxing match have been making. And I hope that debate gets spurned up, stirred up after this. But I don't know if too many people are going to be unable to order the pay-per-view if they want to see it either way. Anyway, going back to UFC 137, I did want to run down the results there. Of course, we had a guy who stirred up the boxing or his MMA debate on his own. The main event, like I said, because GSP got injured, we had Nick Diaz versus DJ Penn. Ended up in a unanimous 3-round decision. Diaz tattooed Penn, gave him one of the worst black eyes I've ever seen anyone suffer in the sport. And even made DJ say that he was going to retire. He said, I'll shake your hand right now to Joe Rogan. Said he's going to retire, and of course, you know, I knew it was going to happen, but I didn't see it until today. There was a story that popped up, maybe he's not going to retire, but he said something to the effect of, you know, I have a daughter, I got another one on the way, I don't want to be going home looking like this. That kind of made me think, well, it's heat of the moment, it's because of the injury that he's saying that he just got tooled up in the fight, you know, doesn't mean he's not going to come back and try to go on a good note. Against, you know, not a bomb, but somebody he can beat so he can hold his head high going out of the cage, you know, this time. Another guy who definitely made it official and isn't having any reservations. Actually, there was reports that Stitch Duran was putting out there that this was definitely going to be his last fight. Even before he stepped in the cage, he knew this, but... We had Krokop Filipovic got TKO'd by Roy Nelson. And Roy always does pretty good when he can get the crucifix move. And that's basically, it's like it sounds, you know, he just, he gets one arm trapped in between two legs, and he's draped over the chest area with all the weight that he has, which is actually a considerable amount less than he had in the last fight, for this fight. But he drapes all that fat over your chest and your neck area there, and then he takes the other arm with one hand and wraps that up, so you can't move either arm. And then he just proceeds to punch you in the head. And he got that move, I think it was like a mid-second round, and then he just kind of hammer-fisted and backhanded his way through the rest of the round, and you could tell Krokop was hurt by those punches, because when he comes out for the next round, he's got like little X's and scratches all over his forehead, and his forehead is bright red and swollen, sticking out a couple inches. So Roy Nelson really went to work there and tuned him up good. it was pretty good to see that Roy had taken some weight off, number one, and got back on the winning track. I kind of had a feeling that they kind of threw crow crop to the wolves there, because Nelson had a legitimate beef with his last fight, with himself, really, that he ended up having to go into that fight with whopping pneumonia. So I don't think anybody expects to do well in that situation. But this time he turned it around. He's not looking like a world beater yet, but, you know, give him another 20 pounds off that gut of his and a little more cardio, I think he's going to be ready to take a test fight rather than a tune-up fight. So we'll see. And we talked about last couple of weeks, Chet Congo, and how sloppy he is, but this time he pulled out a technical decision, really. Fought all three rounds with Matt Mitrione, who really kind of shit the bed to start the fight. Matt kept his distance. He didn't really engage it at all at any point in the first round. And they ended up dancing around for most of the round. And it was kind of disgraceful the way it kind of went into the second round. And then Chet got to a position where it seemed like he wasn't threatened anymore by Mitrione. And I see Mitrione, you know, throw two hands and make somebody step back and think twice about hitting him or even getting close to him. But Chet Congo, no matter how sloppy he's been in the past, he was ripe for Matt Mitrione. This fight, I don't know what happened to Mitrione or why he didn't fight like he usually fights, but he definitely gave Chet Congo every avenue to beat him up. And the last two rounds were all Congo. Mitrione might have edged out the first round, but it was such an uneventful round, it really didn't make a difference. And for the rest of the card, there was 5 unanimous decisions. One knockout, Bart Paluszewski beat Tyson Griffin by knockout in the first round, punches. And we have one submission. Obviously, he won the submission that night. Donald Cerrone submitted Dennis Siever by rear naked choke in the first round. And then we had a split decision with Hatsu Hayoki beating George Woop. And that's pretty much it for that card. Check it out if you want to see the whole deal there. We're going to have our next guest on pretty soon, so I think we want to get to the boxing this weekend.
Well, we got the good fight this weekend.
I know Lucien Bute is fighting. We had our...
It would be a very, very good fight. That is a friend of mine. He is picking Bute for the world series. He's picking Johnson for the knockout win. You know, Glenn Johnson's the toughest little guy. He's 42, 43 years old now. So I don't know what he has left in the tank. He is moving down to 168 pounds. He's been campaigning at 175 for a while now. He had a very good fight with Carl Froch in the Super 6. And that's where I think the problem lies in. I would pick Lucien Bute as a better fighter than Carl Froch. Now, I've said this before 1,000 times. Just because Fighter A beats Fighter B doesn't mean Fighter A will beat Fighter C.
Don't get Froch, calculus on me now.
Yeah, I know. I know that wasn't your forte back at airport. And a lot of times people would always say, well, so-and-so, this guy beat this guy. He should be able to beat the guy that the other guy beat. And I always say, well, look at this. You got Maxi De La Hoya lost to Shane Mosley. Shane Mosley then lost to Vernon Forrest. Vernon Forrest then lost to Ricardo Mayorga. So obviously Ricardo Mayorga should be able to beat Oscar De La Hoya. And De La Hoya kicked his ass. You know? It's funny how things, turn around. Just styles make fights. But very tough fighter, physical. He's a southpaw. Hits tremendously hard with that left hand, especially as an uppercut. And Johnson, as he's getting older, getting a little bit slower, He is not a defensive fighter. He's going to be there right to get hit. He's going to stand in front of Vite. You know, can he wear Vite down, similar to what Liberato Andrade did in the first fight? Oh, absolutely. But I think what you're looking for here is youth, being in his hometown crowd, you know, a lot of hype behind him. I think you got to go with Vite in this fight, either by a decision or even a late-round stoppage. He would be the first guy to stop Glenn Johnson since Bernard Hopkins did back in, I think it was 1997.
Don't ask me. You're the Rain Man.
Yeah, I think it was 97. I remember watching that fight. I was kind of hungover, but...
No, I love Johnson because he is just, you know, proof that you can fight into your 40s as a professional. Granted, he has a shitload of experience, but just being able to have that claim to fame that, you know, you're not only fighting in your 40s, but you're in 100 times better shape than George Foreman was when he first set the bar that high back in the day when we were in high school.
It's a different type of style. People look at like a guy like George Foreman and they were saying, like, oh, Big George was fat and slow and I don't know how he did so good for so long. George was very successful because, first of all, he was a heavyweight. If George was, say, a middleweight or a welterweight or whatever, he never would have been able to fight in his 40s like that. George was successful because, like I said, he was a big guy. The guys that he beat them with power and just being so physically unbelievably strong. George was never fast. He didn't profess to be fast. But he was just so big, so strong. He hit so hard. And that's how he made his success out there.
Well,
guys like Bernard Hopkins.
George blocked his arms.
His arms are huge. You know, they're like tree trunks. You couldn't get through them. Bernard Hopkins wins in his 40s because of his experience, his guile, his knowledge of the sport, knowledge of technique. Glenn Johnson is still successful because he's still a very physical fighter. He's still a very strong and durable fighter. And a lot of these young guys, I mean, he just wears them down. He wears them down, not vice versa. You've had other fighters that have had some success as they've got up in age. Oh, and I was reading a very good article just a few days ago on Manuel Martinez, who's now hitting in his late 30s. And it was saying how a good fighter can be almost like a good pitcher in baseball. And I'm going to take an example of a guy that played for both of our teams by the name of Curt Schilling. Curt Schilling, when he first broke into the league and then he went to the Phillies back in the early 90s, he was a flamethrower, man. He would fireball out there and he would just try to overpower guys. But then as he ended up, his career goes to Arizona, then to Boston, he became more of a finesse pitcher.
But a year early, in my opinion. But go ahead.
What?
I said he quit a year early, in my opinion, but go ahead.
Yeah. But the thing is, he was winning with off-speed stuff, and he was winning with, just being a good all-around pitcher. That's how they describe Juan Manuel Marquez. Marquez, for a lot of years, used a lot of his boxing skills. He won on defense, counter-punching, speed. But then as he got a little bit slower, he learned how to sit down more on his punches, punch a little bit harder. His fights got more exciting, because obviously by sitting down in those punches more, he was making himself, more liable to be hit. He has a good chin, never a great chin. He's been knocked down, a handful of times by guys other than Manny Pacquiao. And he learned how to stand in the pocket more. Sometimes you got to be able to adapt your style. That's what Glenn Johnson's been able to do. That's what Bernard Hopkins has been able to do. But I still say Vite wins this one either late or by decision. Most likely decision because of his youth and, just being a hometown guy and
the fact that
he'll be able to stay a little bit fresher.
Is one of those guys. He always seems to be getting robbed.
Yeah.
He's had a couple bad decisions, but, you know, this is going to be a different fight. It's on Showtime. Butte's fought overseas a lot, I assume. I don't really, I don't have his record in front of me, but from what I just remember off the top of my head, I'm always publishing stuff about his fights here and there, so I think he does fight a lot, in friendly territory, so we might see a different situation here. Fighting on a U.S. network, being on the national spotlight there, but who knows, you never know whether it's even going to come down to a decision, but one thing I always love about boxing is no matter how much you think a guy is favored is going to just blow away the competition, they do a good job of selling both guys once. And just the story behind it makes me want to root for Johnson, but Butte might in fact be a more skilled boxer. It just all depends on what happens that night. If you look at the same philosophy with the Marquez versus Mayweather fight, Marquez versus Pacquiao fight, I don't know if I'd apply same conditions to my pick. I think Manny's definitely got that on lockdown, but miracles do happen.
Yeah.
We'll see. We will see. But I did, actually, one thing I forgot about last week, speaking of boxing, is the ESPN just did a documentary on the real Rocky, Chuck Wepner.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And, I meant to mention it last week, but forgot. On a sad note, I did also want to mention Peter McNeely's father. Tom McNeely, I believe. Passed away recently. I actually never knew he was also a big-time heavyweight boxer back in the day. Actually, a lot better than his son.
A lot better than his son. Yeah, he was legitimately fought for the title, His son legitimately got knocked out by a Pizza Hut pizza.
But he was one of those success stories who also overcame alcoholism, was involved in his son's boxing career. Sounds like a great guy. And it was kind of a cheesy line, but Peter McNeely, I think, said his best when he said, he was in my corner for all these years. I was in his corner on his deathbed there, because they had to make the decision to shut off his life support. He was in and out, not doing good. So, the whole family was in his corner for one last fight. Sad story, great guy, but he's one of those guys that built a good legacy for himself and his family and his friends, and everybody who saw him fight will always remember what kind of guy he was. So, that's one of the stories I wanted to mention this week. We also had a situation with a kid. I don't have the story right in front of me. I'll get it in a second, but kid from New York who was a Golden Gloves fighter. He's not dead, he's in critical condition, and his sister died in a freak accident related to this October snowstorm they had on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And it was just, I think the kid was 26 years old. He was actually a shoo-in for the Olympics. Didn't quite make the cut, and ended up not even being in the car when this happened. There was some accidents on the expressway, and I read the story. Sorry, I don't have the name in front of me. I'll get it for you. But basically what happened was he and his sister are driving in this snowstorm. They get out of the car to help somebody else who had been hit, and somebody else crashes into them. They both go over the guardrail, off the overpass, 75 feet, they said it was, to the ground, where they landed in some pile of construction debris, I guess. And
the brother landed first, the boxer. Sister landed on top of him, but she ended up getting more substantial injuries somehow, and she died. But he's still in critical condition, and that's one of the 35 stories of.
Yeah, my daddy called me up about that a couple of days ago. You know, since he's up in that area, and he asked me if I had heard about it. I had not at the time. And then, yeah, he was telling me he had heard the whole story. You know, obviously being up there.
Freak accident is a better word for it. Anyway, I will get that name before we end up our broadcast. We do have to hear our appointment here with John Phillips. Or to get an email from his agent. Get them all on. Talking to John Phillips, who is a legal expert. He's been on major talk shows. He's an expert in head injury issues.
Up for parole, but isn't one of those tight situations that
up for a camp. Said he was going to have the camp. Didn't have the camp. Took the money. Gave it to some friends. You know, and obviously the details are a little bit more complicated than that, but it's one of those unfortunate situations where there was actually talk back then of a Johnson versus Johnson fight before he got wrapped up in that. The Johnson fighting this weekend, and the Johnson is now behind the bars. But never came to pass. That's what happens to you sometimes in life when you stray from the straight and narrow. So, anyway, so we'll have Patrick on next week. He has also had his son, Darren, right, with him in the same article in separate pieces. So, one of those father and son teams there, too. They're both interested in boxing. Speaking of which, when was the last time we had your dad on the show?
What?
I said, speaking of which, when's the last time we had your dad on the show? That was like...
You know what's funny? I was talking about this the other day. One of my coworkers was asking about the show, and I'm like, you know what? Like, she's like, well, how long do like, you do for the prep? I'm like, me? But she's like, yeah. I'm like, sometimes I don't even know who we're talking to until that night. I said, well, how do you do that? I'm like, I just go. You know, I find out what we're doing, and I'm going to talk to someone. I do some Google research, and I will just go. And then I'm like, one time I said, I'm going to get my dad in the show. He was like, I'm like, Dad, you're on the air. I'm on the air. I'm like, Dad, you're on the air. So it's awesome. What am I supposed to say? I'm like, there's something funny. I don't care. We're going to talk about fight. I'm more about that. But I'm not going to see Dad, you're on the air. We had a good laugh about that. I'm hoping we can get back from Connecticut pretty soon. Because there's a good fight on this weekend, and I hope aside from the Butte Johnson fight, there's another good one between James Kirkland and Alfredo Angulo.
Oh, yeah. I was on a conference call with Angulo back in like 2006. And is he the one that was actually like living in the jungle at one point? I think he is.
I don't know.
He had a fight. He's in somewhere in Central America is where he grew up.
He's Mexican.
Yeah.
He's Mexican.
Mexican. Well, at one point he was like a little lower down, somewhere in Central America for his youth. And then maybe he moved to Mexico. But if I remember, if it's the same guy, it's either him or somebody with a very similar name, but... From what I remember, they described his story before he got on the conference call, and this guy was literally, like, living with a pack of wolves, like the legend goes, you know. Like, he was living in the wild, basically, on his own for years as a young kid, like a toddler. So, talk about tough.
Yeah.
Whether it's him or not. That guy is out there.
That's him or not. I know Edison Miranda for years. He was the one that was like roadkill.
I haven't heard that story.
Yeah. But yeah, he was one like he was. What stalled his career was he got deported. That hurt his career. And then you had the guy who's fighting James Kirkland, very exciting fighter. He was, he had his first loss, so that was obviously, you know, doing much better for him now. But he had gotten thrown in jail a couple years ago.
You know what it was? It's all coming back to me now. What happened? I think I have that memory because the conference call was set up by the promoter saying that he lives in the jungle. now I'm just I just did a thank you for Google because I did the Jungle and Angulo search, and here's the quote that comes up: top five returns. He had said, "I am from a town that is right at the edge of the jungle, so I grew up very much accustomed to a jungle," said Angulo during the conference call. So I think he corrected the guy and said, "Well, you know, I didn't grow up in the jungle, but."
Yeah,
right next to it. So, I know I was surviving. I knew I had some nugget of truth behind that statement. But anyway, let me get the that story up on that. So go into it. Thank God for Google. What would we do without it?
I know Google kicks ass.
But it says, I did see a Facebook post just the other day of somebody saying, stop trying to guess what I'm typing in after one letter, Google. That can get aggravating. Especially when you're on a slow computer, bogs the whole thing down, just trying to do a search for something that you want to find. All right. Yeah, this was in New York City. He was a Golden Gloves champ. Pedro Sosa is his name. This happened, this accident out there in the city. 75-foot overpass. Fought on the streets of the Dominican Republic. On the streets of the Bronx when he moved there at age 10. And he was fighting for his life Monday morning after the accident claimed his sister, Jennifer Sosa, and put him in a coma. One of his relatives, or one of his friends from the boxing program, said he's out of the operating room, they're cleaning him up, he made it through. One of the latest reports, they had plummeted off the Bronx Expressway, the Cross Bronx Expressway, at about 5:45 on Sunday morning when it all happened. And sometimes that's the worst, you know, when you're out there in the morning that early, and it's just before rush hour, so people think they can go a little faster. You get on those slick roads, and it's always worse, too, when it's the first snowstorm of the year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
People have suddenly forgot how to drive in the snow because there's four freaking seasons, you know. And, as many winters as you see as in New England, that first snowstorm always screws you up. And this one was a bad one. 35 people got killed, including this poor girl there trying to help out fellow citizens. So, definitely calling for her brother. He was a top-ranked amateur at 141 pounds. Has one of the best left hooks in the game. It's like I used to throw. But, at this point, it's one of those battles where he's got to be lucky just to survive. Never mind, get back to the sport of boxing. But, hopefully he'll be able to do that too and pick up where he left off. But I'm sure a lot of people are pulling for him, and sad, sad story there.
Yeah, from what I heard, I don't know. Sad to say, but I don't know. With regards to last week, I was supposed to go out Saturday night, which was the night of the storm. Most of the storm happened during the course of the day. I was going to go out for a Halloween costume contest. I've been going to it every year since 2003. And my costume this year was going to be, was bringing back the half Freddy, half Jason costume. And I had gotten all new makeup. I got all new stuff to redo it. And I was going to have a friend of mine use my camera to do like little 2-minute videos as I was applying the makeup and stuff. And a coworker of mine does video editing. He was going to edit it all into one video for me. So during the day, it's snowing, it's snowing, it's snowing. And I'm sitting there talking to my friend during the course of the day, and it's like, well, we might have to go out plowing tonight because my friends, you know, like, well, especially the one guy, he really needs some money. You know, he's, you know, in pretty bad financial shape. I could not drive with this costume on because the hot mask covers the entire left side of my face, and it's hard to see anyway. Like, during the daytime, you have to drive with it, but not at nighttime, you know, especially with the left side of my face covered. So you're basically asking a person to drive at night with half their face covered, now add icy roads into it. And during the course of the day, I'm following online about this costume party that I'm supposed to go to. I'm hoping they're going to cancel it and reschedule it. I'm like, that would be awesome. So the costume party, they had an event on Facebook that I was RSVP'd to. And it was Halloween Bash with College Mansion, which is a group of just hot girls that go there and just look hot. And Split Decision, which is a band that I'm good friends with, $500 in prizes. Then around like 2 o'clock, this event name is changed to Halloween Bash with Split Decision, $500 in prizes. Uh-oh, College Mansion's out. Then around 3:30, 4 o'clock, it changes again. Halloween Bash. No cover charge, $2 drinks. And then I saw my friends in Split. They were like, "No, we got canceled. You know, we're not going." And I'm today. I'm like emailing like the one guy that's putting the show on. I'm like, "Dude, you should reschedule." I'm like, "Dude, you should definitely reschedule." I'm emailing the one like one manager at the bar. I'm like, "Dude, you should definitely reschedule because I really wanted to go." But unfortunately, there was no rescheduling, and this costume, which I spent a shitload of money on getting, is now. Gonna have to wait for next year. I'm not happy about it.
Well, we'll just have to find somebody willing to throw a belated costume party somewhere.
Yeah, but I think I'm gonna sue Mother Nature because I mean, I was gonna win that contest for $500.
Well, it's too bad we didn't have our guest on tonight. He might be able to tell you if that's possible.
Absolutely.
Sue Mother Nature.
It's her dress.
Cool. I said Mother Nature is the biggest bitch in the world.
Yeah, you know, especially on the East Coast. I mean, I never could have picked a better time to come out west. And, you know, other than the freaking nuclear waste all around Nevada, it's pretty good weather. You know, you just don't drink the water. I guess I think that's the worst thing about Nevada is all the nuclear experiments they did out here. But there's a reason why the government keeps their most secretive programs out here too. You know, it's perfect landscape to simulate the Middle East.
Yeah.
Without the hotness, you know, you got the mountains all over the place, the flat valley in the middle. But anyway, yeah, it's unfortunate. We had hurricanes. Yeah, one of the worst years for tornadoes in the Midwest. Mother Nature is a bitch slap.
Yeah, she's definitely
a fucking tsunamis and earthquakes everywhere. Turkey had like two in the last few months.
Yeah.
WTF, Mother Nature. What the fuck? All right, well, we got a couple oddball stories here. Yeah, we're going to probably tick off early and catch your
Why,
favorite show.
Why, did you want to watch
Beavis and Butthead? Because we what?
Did you want to watch Beavis and Butthead?
No. What did you mention, man? Before the show tonight, I was thinking about that time when I started the show off with saying, I need TV for my radio show. I was talking about you. I watched it last week, thanks to you.
It was great, wasn't it?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, couldn't have picked a better time for reality television to bring Beavis and Butthead back to make fun of the Jersey Shore. I saw the preach on Jimmy Kimmel it was Jimmy Kimmel. Did a preview where it was like the actual Snooki sitting there in the studio. Venus was on the TV saying shit to her. That was a little weird. It wasn't as funny as the actual show. That was good. But they talked about JWoww and her little clip there talking about calling her grandkids a bitch. That was good.
Oh, this is Grandma JWoww.
I have to say my all-time favorite Beavis and Butthead was when his Beavis had the bloody nose and he put the tampon on it. He like lost all the blood in his body. That's a bad one.
It's trying to get him behind the Heimlich maneuver.
Yeah.
The blood
sweet thing wanted to be.
Did you ever see the custom made Lockheed and Boston Beavis and Butthead shirt that I have?
Bro.
I haven't made it my freshman year. In fact, I just posted on the Locking and Boxing page. I had a guy make it for me. It's like they're both in red tops and red trunks, and it says like LHU across the front. They're in boxing gloves, but it's like Locking and Boxing rules. He's like, yeah, LHU rules.
There was actually a kid at the Air Force Academy, probably one of the funniest developments of my whole freshman year there, was the fact that Beavis was my classmate. Living, breathing Beavis. I mean, this kid was like, they made the cartoon into a real person. He was just the same build and height, just as much of a weakling. And they didn't call him Beavis, but that's the first thing I thought of when I saw him. And one of the funniest moments of that whole year, even though it was kind of sad for him, was when we did the pugil sticks. We had one of those training camps where, we had practice for the pugil sticks. It was like, American Gladiator without the platforms. This was on the hard ground. And you had lacrosse helmets on and hockey gloves. You're just out in the middle of the field beating each other with pugil sticks. So our counselor cadre people decide we're going to take Beavis here, and we're going to put him standing alone in the middle of this field, and we're going to get the two biggest guys that we can possibly find in this little squadron, and we're going to give them pugil sticks, and they're going to rush this kid. So we're going to see how he defends himself. And, of course, his head was much bigger than his body, just like the real Beavis. The only difference was he had a shaved head. But, his hair was blondish-reddish, like Beavis, too, when he had hair. So made it even funnier. But anyway, so they blow the whistle to start the combat. And the two big guys, both on the football team, by the way, just headlong rush directly at Beavis. And the first guy to get to him just clotheslines him. He doesn't even lift a finger to block his face. Just hits him square in the freaking jaw. And the kid goes down like a ton of bricks. And man, it was so funny. He had to be there. Sad for him that they would do that. Knowing that was going to be the outcome. But, oh, man. Talk about life imitating art. It should have been a Beavis and Butthead episode. Anyway, Evander Holyfield's back in the news. Here's an oddball story for you. Challenging the Klitschko brothers.
Oh, boy. Challenging the what?
Arm wrestling. No. of course, he said he wants to quit his champion. He's 49 years old now, getting a little up there. Hasn't had any kind of impressive performance against anybody close to the Klitschko's for a lot of years. but he won one World Boxing Council, four World Boxing Association, and three International Boxing Federation titles in his ultimate career. And his probably his most famous fight was when he knocked out Tyson in 1996. And then retained the belt a year later when he lost a piece of his ear to Tyson's major malfunction after getting headbutted a couple times and losing his mind. But he's been in the ring twice this year, had a bout against Sherman Williams. It was ruled a no contest after he suffered a cut in the left eye. And then in May, he fought Brian Nielsen. Not the same guy as the Nielsen ratings, I don't think. The same family. But his next bout is supposed to be Brazil now in December against a yet-to-be-determined opponent after Alexander Povetkin canceled. So I doubt Holyfield is going to get that opportunity. Let's go. Even did want to fight him and beat him to a pulp. But in other news, we talked about a little bit about Viacom buying up Bellator earlier. Well, Bellator is already making a little maneuver at the UFC. They picked up former UFC welterweight Brian Foster, signed him to a new deal, and looking for him to fight Ben Askren in the future. He just won one of their tournaments, or one of their main events. Foster was 3-2 while he was in the UFC. And get this, speaking of brain injuries, head injuries, he left the promotion after a pre-fight medical test revealed a brain hemorrhage prior to his fight in April at UFC 129. And I think we did mention that when that happened off the cuff. You know, he's back in the news, and he's okay. And we talked about this last week. You know, the case with the NFL dude, Jerome Harrison, discovering a brain tumor because he got traded. Did you go to the doctor? Did you confirm that you do not have a tumor? It's not a tumor.
Did I go to the doctor? No, not yet. I thought about it though.
Jeez.
I had a headache up until about Tuesday. It's something like 8 or 9 consecutive days.
All right. Well,
I don't have one right now, so I don't think I need to go.
I think you're good. Supposedly that Harrison dude was so bad with the headaches, he actually had to wear like special sunglasses and a special shade on his helmet and everything like that. It's amazing it took him that long to figure out it was something an MRI could have discovered there. Well, hopefully he pulls through that. Let's see what else we got here.
About, I just read something that Andrew Gawad is thinking about coming back.
Uh-oh. I know there's actually another story I wanted to mention. Here on the blog somewhere. There was actually new top contenders named in the heavyweight division recently. So the Klitschkos aren't going to be fighting Holyfield. They just named a mandatory opponent for one of them. Oh, here it is. Tony the Tiger Thompson had the IBF declaring him the mandatory challenger for Vladimir's belt after his opponent in the IBF heavyweight title elimination bout, Eddie Chambers, was forced to withdraw from their October 28th fight and couldn't commit to a replacement date of December 17th.
About a month ago, down at that fight card in Philadelphia. And, you know, I looked down there, say hi to him, just shake his hand, you know, hand me a business card, you know, my usual. And I was walking in there, he was talking to somebody, and I'm like, yeah, so when are you fighting again? And he was like, yeah, October 28th, and, yeah, and he really seemed negative about it. I'm like, anytime you're fighting, you know, you get a shot to become a mandatory challenger for, you know, the heavyweight championship of the world, I was a little surprised that he was so negative. And then so when I heard that he was withdrew from the fight, I was like, something fishy.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But Klitschko will first have to fight Jean-Marc Mormac, who's
Or
22 knockouts, and that fight's on December 10th. So Thompson technically gets the winner of that, which will likely be Klitschko. Another guy who is the WBC's number one heavyweight contender is our good old buddy Chris Areola.
Yeah, I was reading about him.
33-2, 28 knockouts. He had his debut fight in Mexico. So he has his debut fight in Mexico on Saturday, this coming Saturday. Leon, Mexico. It's going to be on ESPN Deportes. It's funny, somebody had a little Freudian slip in the blog this week, and they called it ESPN Deported. And it was a legitimate mistake. They were trying to be funny. I saw that. I was like, oh, man, that is so bad. It's going to be on Televisa and ESPN Deportes, Chris Areola. And these both guys are represented by Dan Goosen. So he's keeping a foothold in the sport. Keep an eye out on these heavyweights. Now, what do you think is going to happen sooner, Tony? Here's a question. We didn't get to talk about head injuries in football, but here's a good question. What's going to happen first? Are the Klitschko's, one of the Klitschko's going to lose, or is Peyton Manning going to start? What's going to happen first?
Well,
So Peyton Manning start.
I would have to say Manning start. And the reason I say that
is most of your big-time fighters are only fight maybe two times a year. So you have maybe one, maybe two, Vladimir or Vitaly Klitschko fight before next September. I don't think you're going to see Manning at all this year, but by next September, I think Peyton will be playing again. So I would have to go with Manning on that.
Well, as much as Curtis Painter is sucking, and I saw that.
Yes, he is.
There was a little notation in the ticker on ESPN earlier that Manning might actually start again this year. I'm definitely going with the Peyton Manning starting over the Klitschko's losing. I don't see it, you know. None of these, I mean, even being favorable to our buddy Chris Areola, our former guest on the show. I don't see the Klitschko's losing to anybody until they switch sports. I don't see it happening either. What can you do? I think that's about it. That's all the ammunition I have in my rifle for the evening here. I had a lot of notes to cover. Covered them all. And unfortunately, we didn't get to talk to John M. Phillips, the legal beagle on head injuries, but we'll reschedule him for next week. And we have a great guest at 8:30 next week, already scheduled, Patrick McElligott, and has quite the interesting background and knowledge of the sport, boxing. So, it'll be like boxing heaven for you next week.
Yes, it is.
And we can even put a little bit of NFL action in there. Congratulations to the turnaround of the Philadelphia Eagles. They did great off their bye week. So
they kicked the crap out of the Cowboys, which always makes me happy.
Exactly. And doing good with one of my fantasy teams, too. Happy. Patriots lost, but it's one of those games. through Green Bay this year, so yeah. I'm not even sweating until the playoffs when that game happens. That's going to be the team to beat. Obviously, being undefeated still to this day is tough to do. Patriots did it once, and then they fucked it up by those concussions. I think it's going to be a good week in the NFL, and obviously they're also going to have a big college game. Even if you're not into college football, you probably heard about LSU versus Alabama. So, it's a big week for football in general. It's too bad we didn't get our legal expert on, but you know, maybe it'd be better after we talk to him next week after that game is done, because one of those questions I wanted to ask was, what good is it to, you know, try to change the head injury situation by fining NFL players when you can't fine college and high school players for the same thing to get them to stop doing it at that age? You know, you got to figure out a better way to fix that problem. But we discussed that before already. Would have been nice to have some documented legal expertise on that subject. We'll get it done next week. I didn't get much notice anyway, so I forget. We're not paying them by the hour, so find somebody who would be willing to put up more for that time slot is. Anyway, that's all I got. Don't let me drag it on anymore, Tony.
All right, that's all I got.
Sign it off.
That's all.
Thanks for stopping
by. See you next week, man. This is the Tornado, and I am out.
Adios.